Thank you. Okay, Perek Yutes, that's chapter 19. Just before we start, I just wanted to share, you know, there's a book called Hayom Yom, which is a little calendar. It was written in Tavshin Gimel, which is 1943. The Rebbe wrote it, the Rebbe put it together. He wasn't the Rebbe then, but he put it together. And each day had a quote from his father-in-law, from the previous Rebbe. So it's a book also that it sometimes talks about the customs of the various festivals that come in the calendar, comes a bit of a guide, but also like there's a quote. So just yesterday's quote, and I thought I'd share with you before we start. Talks about the Friedrich Rebbe said what Chassidus is. He says, it's a very small quote, but it's very powerful. He says, Chassidus is a godly understanding, right? It's a type of understanding that shows the person how small he is and to what greatness is able to lift himself up to, right? In other words, you know, because we've had parts of Tanya and we have it later on as well, very, very sharply. Tanya and Chassidus General is not shy to tell you how small you are. But the context is, it's how small you are, so you recognize where you are, but you also recognize how high you can actually elevate yourself, which is a very nice quote. Okay. So, we started last week, not 2 weeks ago, we started the chapter 18, which is it's like a series within a series. In other words, it's obviously within Tanya, but it's starts a new concept in Tanya, which goes till chapter 25. So the idea was in Perek Yutches that he identified a new type of love for Hashem. If we can't reach the full-blown love in our hearts or even in our minds, and that's what we call the Ava Mesuteris. It's the hidden love. He defined it as something which is in the deep part of the neshama. It's what he refers to, and he's going to do it in chapter 19 as well. Refers to it as the chokhmah of the neshama. Basically, it's the emunah, it's the deep love that is ingrained and inherited by each Jew from Avraham Avinu. It's connected to Chochmah of Atzilus, which is the bridge between Or Ein Sof and the worlds, as we'll elaborate on today as well. And it's where the Mesiris Nefesh comes from. Right? Okay, so that's the Ava Mesiris, and every Jew has it. So in other words, the point is that if you can't create an emotional love on your own, you have to connect to the love which you already have, which is the Ava Mesiris. Okay. Now, even though we don't need to awaken, we don't need to reveal that love, we don't need to create that love because it's already there, we all have it, but nevertheless, it's not that easy. In other words, we have a very, very big avoida, we have a lot of work to do to reveal that love. It is revealed in times when we are challenged spiritually. So that's the point we talked about Mesiris Nefesh. I'll explain more why now. But on a daily routine, conscious level, it's not revealed. It's there, but it's not in our consciousness, and it takes a lot of effort to reveal it, right? So the way it works like this, for the next few chapters, the Alter Rebbe is going to explain how you can reveal it, right? It comes with a lot of thinking, reflection, and a perspective, in other words, you can develop a perspective. Of how you can reveal it. But in chapter 19, what he's going to do is just elaborate a bit more on what that love actually is. What is that love? What does it do? What's the nature of that love, right? Because actually, all we'll see is he talks about love of Hashem that one creates in the heart and emotional about that one creates in the brain and so on. But actually, this Ava Mesiteris, this love that's hidden, is actually a very different type of love. We're going to explain in this chapter what that is. It's a different type of love. That is normally, it's a very deep love actually, but we'll explain what that is. Okay. Says the following. So just as an introduction, he says like this. He's going to explain the following. That normally a love, we talk about the word love, right? Just to explain why this is so different. We talk about the word love. The word love is normally about loving something that you're looking for, that you are looking for. Correct? Which is why love normally is actually I don't want to say the word selfish, but it's an emotion which the I is quite present in those, right? even at its highest level. Even at its highest level, where someone mamash loves Hashem, just wants to do what Hashem wants, and so on and so forth, but it's still that he's loving Hashem. The person is loving Hashem, right? We call it in Hebrew, there's a mevukash. There's something you're looking for, and if what you're looking for and want to connect to is Hashem, then that's great. That's exactly what we want, right? The nature of this love is different. This love is actually bittul. It's a love that generates complete bittul, nullification, which is why the source, the outcome of this love is mesiras nefesh at its highest level. We'll see. Okay, let's see. So he says, "Lotoisvus bir," to understand this a bit more. Sorek lavar heitu. We have to understand. We have to explain very well. Mashakosev, what the pasuk tells us. Ner Hashem nishmas adam, right? That the neshama of the candle of Hashem is the neshama of the human being, meaning that our neshama is compared to a candle. Why is it compared to a candle? Everyone knows it, right? We light a candle for neshama, and why? Because neshama is compared to a candle. Why is it compared to a candle? Yeah. What does it mean? It goes up. Why does the light go up actually? Why is the nature of fire to ascend upwards? You know that? Do you know why? It explains like this. I'm not sure what the scientific explanation is, but this is what it says here. Pirush, she Yisrael Akruim Adam, the Yidden who are called Adam. In other words, it says, he's talking about the Nefesh Elokisya, because he says, it does say in the Pasuk, Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, it's the Neshama of man, it doesn't say Neshama of a Jew, but it's referring to the Jewish people, it's referring to the Jewish Neshama, because that is, the Gemara says that's who's really called an Adam. Ulamashal Ka'ira Ner, it's like the candle, the light of a candle. Shemisnanea tomid lamailo betivoy. It is the default, the natural position of a flame and fire to go upwards. Why? Bivnei sha'oir ha'esh, the light of a fire, chafetz beteva liparid mahapsila, naturally wants to separate from the wick. It's the wick that holds it down, but naturally wants to separate from the wick. Uli dovek b'shorshoi lemaila b'soyd ha'esh ha'kloli shetakas galgal hayorech. And it wants to, I'll just read the words and I'll explain. It wants to connect, it wants to cleave to its original source in above, which is the foundation of fire, the general foundation of fire that is under the orbit of the moon. Now, let's understand that. So the Rambam explains this. It's not the Tanya thing. This is I'm constantly worried, but the Rambam explains it at length in the beginning. He says essentially that Hashem created the world with four foundations: fire, water, fire, wind, water, and dust. Right. Now, when we talk about these four foundations, it doesn't mean the fire. For example, it doesn't mean the fire we have here. The fire we have here is already an amalgamated fire. In other words, the fire has some physicality. So everything in this world has some of the other foundations also, right? Just fire here is a diluted form of the pure fire that is the foundation of the world, and actually it's just similar, it's most similar to its origin, right? So I don't exactly understand what this means, but the Rambam says that when Hashem created the orbits and the spheres, he calls it Galgalim, Hashem, before he created this earth, he created these four pure foundations. Pure fire, whatever that looks like, I don't know. Pure water, pure wind, and pure dust, right? Those are the four foundations. The one that is most spiritual, and the one that is least tangible, is the foundation of fire. Now, because that is, therefore fire here also has a certain spirituality to it. And if you want to have that's what we know, we talk about an analogy of becoming spiritual in this world. Fire is a good example. It's light. It's not tangible. The flame itself, that is, and it's very sort of in the physical world. It's like the most spiritual. Okay. The reason that fire wants to go up is because fire down here is a diluted entity that's disconnected from a source. Right.
It's distinct from water or dust.
Yes, so water is much more gushy. Says water doesn't feel its disconnection as much, because when it's translated, wind is also quite so. Fire and wind are the most spiritual. Mm-hmm. Wind doesn't go upwards. Wind goes sideways, really. But I mean, it goes up. It's also, but it's also not tangible. But it's also the concept of ruach nistika. Water in the country. Water comes down, dust is down, and it's much less conscious of its disconnection from its source, because by nature, it is sent here to be a much more physical entity. Right? Whereas fire isn't. Fire is still more spiritual and more refined, I guess is the word. And therefore, fire is inbuilt in the physical. Fire is this feeling of disconnection, right? Or it's distance from its source, which is more obvious because it's closer to its source. Actually, that's why it's more it feels distance more, kind of thing, right? Therefore, that's why fire goes upwards, because the teva, the nature of a flame, is wants to leave the wick. It wants to be incorporated in its original source. Right? That's what fire does. Now, it says, even though through this yichbe, if the fire goes upwards and it's incorporated in the original, what we call the original foundation of fire, it'll actually be extinguished. This flame here won't burn as a flame. Actually won't illuminate where it's illuminating now. Now it's a big yichus, it makes light. It causes light. It won't, if it departs, it's no more fire, and there's nothing to make light anymore, right? The gamla maila b'shar, down here it'll just be uis, it won't exist anymore. The gamla maila b'shar, even as it incorporates in its original source, yisbatil oirei b'sharsha, it'll become completely bottle in its source. I'll give you an example. So, for example, it would be completely insignificant. It won't really exist as a dependent thing. In other words, it'll be there, but it won't be there as a separate entity. Right? If it would have its way, so to speak, right? The fire. And it would disconnect from the wick to be incorporated in what we call this original fire. Number one, it will cease to exist in this world. Correct? And even when it goes to its source, it will cease to have any independent identity. Will just be swallowed up by its right. A little bit of a mushal for this is like the Gemara says, "Shraga batira mayahani." If you light a candle on a very very sunny day outside when it's broad daylight, the fire is there, but it's not recognizable at all. And here it's even more, because there at least the fire effect is it is burning. If you block the sun, you'll see it. There it's incorporated within the original light, right? Nevertheless, afal pikein. Nevertheless, b'kachul chafetz b'tivoy. That's what the nature of fire is. It wants to be incorporated in its original source, notwithstanding the fact that it actually will lose more of its identity than it has now. He says, Kach nishmas ha'odom. So too is with the neshama of a person. Yeah? Not just the neshama, he says, but even the nefesh, the Mefarshim say, even nefesh ruach, all the levels of the neshama. It's like a flame, right? So what does it mean? By nature, the default position of an neshama is to depart from the wick. What's the wick? The wick is the body. The body is what holds the neshama down. It wants to go away. It actually wants to go away from the guf. It wants to go away from the guf to cleave, to be incorporated, to be swallowed up by its original source, which is Bahashem, with God, Chaya Chayim Baruch Hu, the infinite light of Hashem. Hagam, even though the neshama knows very much, Shetiya Ayin Ve'efes, it'll be nothing there. But this bottle Shom B'metzius Legamri, it will lose its metzius, lose its identity. Nothing's going to be left Mimuhusa Ve'atzmusa Arishin from its original existence here, right? Because what we need to understand is like this. Even though we said, just to clarify what this comment is made. Even though in the second chapter of Tanya he says that the neshama is a chelek lekami mal mamash. It's a part of Hashem, right? So the neshama has an effusion of godliness, as we see, right? Nevertheless, the way the neshama evolves and comes down, it still at its core is one with Hashem, different to the rest of the world, but it still has been affected. In Exodus, sometimes it says the expression, it's godliness that became a creation. It's a godly creation. It's an entity. It's an entity. It's not. It's not. Neshama at its core is a part of God, and the spark, the yichida, the fifth level is one with God and all that. But the neshama, the functioning neshama, is actually a creation. It's a godly creation. It's a divine creation. It's a consciousness. It's like the fire down here. It's like, right? It's not God. We all have a unique neshama, a unique entity, a personality, and all that kind of stuff, right? And the neshama nevertheless wants to lose all of that. Wants to become bottle, right? He says, nevertheless, even though it's going to become nothing, that's its will. That's its natural desire. That's its natural default. Rotzen, right? But now, he wants to comment now on a word that he used. He said the neshama wants it beteva, naturally. Now, normally we use the word nature in different contexts. Nature is normally used as a mechanism of how the world runs, which actually is a concealment of God, right? God is hidden in the nature. When we say the neshama wants to become part of Hashem naturally, it's a borrowed term. With teva zeh, this word teva, he says, u'shem hu mushal, it's a borrowed term, l'chol dover, to describe anything, she'eino b'chinas tavadas, is not rational. Same thing over here. The gamkan, akavonu she'rotzen v'chevet zeh b'nefesh, this rotzen, this desire the neshama has to leave the body and to be incorporated in its original existence, it's not a rational thing. On the contrary, if the neshama thought rationally, it wouldn't want to leave. It wouldn't want to stay here, to be something, right? It's higher than das. It's higher than knowledge. It's higher than rationale. It's not a thought-out, rational process that happens in this world. It's something that's just in its essence, it's an intrinsic will. The neshama just wants to be incorporated into its original source, to become part of that much greater reality from where it came from, even though it will lose its current identity. Right? And what is that? So it's not rational. What is it? It comes back to the term we used last time. It's the chachma of the soul. Because we said, what is the definition of chachma? All chachma goes back to chachma vatzilis. What's chachma vatzilis? Chochmah Atzilus is that bridge between the Or Ein Sof and intellect. So it's not intellectual. Chochmah is part of the three intellectual powers, but in itself is not intellectual power. It's actually the ability to understand something which is beyond the normal, natural intellectual process. That's why even in our seichel, even in our intellectual experience, it's that here we're talking about the Chochmah of the Nefesh much more on a deeper level, but when we talk about even the Chochmah of our seichel, It's that willingness to understand something beyond my understanding. Right? That's what the definition of chokhmah is. That's why he talks here. Chokhmah, he's not talking about the chokhmah of the nefesh. He's not so much talking about the. It's more like the fifth level. He's not so much talking about the chokhmah as a part of our intellectual experience, but it's the same concept. Chokhmah is that point where it belongs to an entity, but actually it's more connected to the higher entity. Right? That's the idea of chokhmah. Chokhmah Atzilus is the same thing. Chokhmah Atzilus is that point of transition between the infinite light of Hashem before Atzilus, higher than what we call Seder Shdalshlus, and the world of Atzilus. And that's why the revelation of the oneness of Hashem, the infinity of Hashem, the complete bittul to Hashem is found in Chochmah Atzilus. That's what Chochmah Atzilus brings into the worlds. Right? So therefore, this concept of the neshama wanting to leave the body, this is basically what he's describing here, is the concept of complete bittul. Right? The neshama at its core has complete bittul. It wants to have nothing to do with itself. It wants to be completely one with its source. Right? That is true bittul. True bittul. Yeah.
And that's the DNA.
That's the DNA of the neshama. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's not a rational thing completely, right? Now, that's why it's the part of the neshama that is completely connected with the Ori Sof. And it's the part of the neshama that when it's revealed, first of all, it's where Emunah lives, because Emunah is not rational, and where real Mesiras Nefesh lives, right? Now, we've talked about this before, but it's important to understand what real Mesiras Nefesh means, right? Real Mesiras Nefesh means to have Mesiras Nefesh when it doesn't make sense, not when it does make sense. You can have Mesirus Nefesh when it makes sense. That's why we find Mesirus Nefesh by other nations also. Right? I think I told you this, right? The word the Chassidim used to say about Socrates. Socrates was he spread the concept of belief in a God, and he got killed for it because it was very unpopular in his times, right? When he deviated from the normal philosophical journey. So Chassidim say a story. That when Socrates came to Shemayim, he was expecting a big reward. He was expecting to have a good place in Gan Eden. After all, he had Mesirus Nefesh, right? And he requested to have a place in Gan Eden next to Avraham Avinu. He said, I'm like Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was prepared to die for Hashem. Avraham Avinu was prepared even to, right? He jumped into the furnace. Me too. I also got killed, right? He had Mesirus Nefesh. I had Mesirus Nefesh. So they told him in Shemayim, there's a huge difference between you and Avraham Avinu. And this is, he used to say that, I don't know why they say the story, but they used to say it to bring it out. I know my father always repeated very often. They used to say it to bring out this point over here. He said, you, Avraham Avinu had real Mesirus Nefesh. You just replaced one desire for another. What does that mean? Not that we're belittling his Mesirus Nefesh, but he was saying like this. People like to live lives that are good for them, right? So now, if you live this animalistic life, so you live a life that's good for your pleasure now. So it's very, very superficial. It's very transient. But that's just a meaningless life, a purpose. Like it. Then there's some people that think more. This is not necessarily too limited to being Jewish. It's not even necessarily nefesh l'kis. Just you go into a bit deep and you realize, no, if you want true meaning, you want true happiness, there's going to be something to live for. You need purpose in life, right? Purpose in life is not a Hasidic concept. It's a psychological concept, especially nowadays, right? Purpose can be anything. You live for something better, not just that pleasure. You live to help people. You, I don't know, whatever. You volunteer. You spread health. You become a doctor. Whatever the purpose is, right? So for some people, the purpose they discover is in religion. That's fine. That's good. But it comes from the fact that they believe that's better for them, right? Sometimes what can happen is that aspiration to live a life of meaning or to live a life of religion, a belief in God even, a person can be so committed that that's the only way to live a life of meaning that if something stands in the way of it, they're ready to give up their life. Why? Because a life without emunah is, or without religion, is not a life worth living. So you'll give up your life for it even, right? But at the end of the day, it's still a conclusion, a conscious decision you've come to, because that's what's good for you. Because you understand it. Now, it's a very good thing. If you come to the conclusion that it's good for you to do a mitzvah, for you to believe in God, that's a fantastic thing. But at the end of the day, it's about you. Right? That's why if you look in history, all the people that gave up their lives, not Jews, I'm talking about, not right? You find many, many people, other religions, that give up their life. Why? Because they believe that it's good for them. It's consistent with the life they've been living. But now they'll give it up, right? Right, even the Shagoyim and enemies, right? They prepare to die. They live for dying. But that's because they believe that's their brainwashing. They believe that's their thing they're going to find. I don't know what they're going to find there, right? Mesirus Nefesh, so that's what they told Socrates. Some people like cheesecake and you like a life of meanings. Okay, so you gave your life for it, but it's not real Mesirus Nefesh. It's good, but it's like, Avraham Avinu, when he went to the Akedah, he did something that makes no sense whatsoever. Was against whatever he believed in. It was bad for business. If he would have ended up killing Yitzchak, he could close down shop. It was right. Why did you look at Hashem said so? And throughout the ages, this is the point. This is the point he made last time that we find. He's made a few times already in Tanya. That in Yiddishkeit, we find that there were Yidden that gave up their life who didn't live a life of Yiddishkeit. It's not that they were looking for that purpose. They weren't. But they have it because. The Chochmah of the Nefesh. Chochmah of the Nefesh says, I want to become part of Hashem, I want to be bottled to Hashem, even if I lose myself. So it's not a Mesirus Nefesh for self, even at the highest, most refined level. It's a Mesirus Nefesh that negates self. It's true bittul. Right? That's why throughout history, we find many times that when that Chochma Sheba Nefesh was ignited, when it was challenged, when it was touched, a Yid who never lived his life, who didn't have that intellectual aspiration to live in love of Yiddishkeit because it was good for them, but they still gave up their life. Why? Because that's what a Yid is. A Yid is one with Hashem. Even if it means losing yourself, even if it means losing your Metzias, like the flame becomes incorporated in the higher fire. Right? Now, it's a very important perspective on Bittul, because people misunderstand Bittul. I just remember once did on a Thursday morning, I thought it was very funny. It was very nice that you did that, but it was and it was great that you made that progress, but it was such a misunderstanding what it says here in Tanya, right? So you remember that with that book on Bechal Ashram about how she became close to Yiddishkeit through Tanya? That was a woman who had she was very high flying in the social media space and she had anxiety and nothing helped even the therapy and so like, and then she found meaning through Tanya and it's taka wonderful. I mean what she did is taka wonderful. I have more complaints on a Tanya teacher actually than her, but she what she did is amazing. She started doing mitzvahs and she kept kashrus, started doing Shabbos I think a little bit and whatever. She's growing. But she was explaining some of the parts she learned in Tanya and she came to this part. And she said that she discovered the idea of bittul. And she even quotes this thing about the flame that goes up and but she misunderstood it completely. She said, I learned what's bittul. She said, up until now I thought that the world revolves around me. When I learned about Bittul, I realized that not the whole world revolves around me. It's a complete misunderstanding of Bittul. Right? It's nice, it means I'm not wrapped on myself. It's a towards Bittul. And I'm not sure, you know, that's as far as lots of us will get. But in terms of what and having the mindset of what real Bittul is, it's not that I came to the conclusion that not the whole world revolves around me. Nothing revolves around me. That's what Bittul is. Absolutely nothing. It's all about Hashem. Now, obviously, he brings this out because at the end of the series, in other words, when we get to chapter 25, the point is not to have a serious nefesh. Right? At the end of the day. What's the tachlis in life? Not that was...
Not to.
No. What I mean by that? The point is not to die, essentially, right? We have the ability to die if we have to. In other words, deep down, the Chochmah of our Nefesh dictates to us that if something stands in the way, we'll give up our life for Yiddishkeit, right? But is that the purpose of life? No. It's to be, in fact, on the contrary, sometimes it explains that even a greater bittul is to remain alive. Because the word tzaddik, right, the whole idea of Nodav and Aviyu, right? Nodav and Aviyu actually reached this level of the Neshama. They revealed the Neshama. Meaning, they revealed that they felt the flame. And therefore, what happened? They taka left the wick. Right? So it says, a deeper bittul is when you feel the flame, to actually remain alive.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last bit.
A deeper form of bittul is when you feel the flame,
yeah.
And you actually, your neshama is about to leave your body, you say, no, Hashem wants me to be here. It's even a deeper bittul. Now, for us to stay alive, that's not a deeper bittul, that's just self. But you know, it's on the concept. Now, however, like everything in Chassidus, like I always keep on saying, right? It's about the mindset. It's about the mindset, right? And when you have the mindset, even though we're not at the level of Mesiras Nefesh, nor are we in the level of Nodav and Aviyu, right? Who actually really want to leave, and Hashem really wants to leave their body, we're not there at all. But nevertheless, there's the concept that happens a lot that does happen, right? It's that mindset that we hear not for ourselves. The total bittul means that it's not. I mean, you see this with the Rebbe in terms of his like leadership and his direction of how he wanted like shluchim and he wanted chassidim to be and so on and so forth. That it should be not. It's not about you. Let's say a guy says, you know, because we have this in our lives. Let's say a person says, you know, I need. The Rebbe spoke about this a lot. You know when he spoke about it? He spoke about it when he was the beginning of the Shlichus movement, right? Sorry, one second. So what's fascinating is that when the Rebbe first started the Shlichus movement, it was a very novel idea, right? Today it's not, but then it was crazy. I mean, when he took one of the first Shluchim and sent him off from New York to Milano, for example, it was like crazy. It was like a crazy thing to do. Taking a young guy, just got married, away from his family, right? and taking him away. Parents were devastated. It was like a huge thing, right? And sometimes it would come with also complaints that were legitimate complaints, spiritual complaints. Like, I was thinking, I'm not ready, I want to learn more. I want to spend a few more years learning, that kind of thing, right? And learning is very important. Rebbe would emphasize learning all the time. The message that Rebbe gave is not about what you want to do, even godly things, not about you altogether. It's about what is needed from you now. It could be taki right. It could be if you stay here and you don't go, you'll learn a few more years, you'll be more spiritual, maybe more knowledgeable, maybe. Right? I mean, Rebbe wanted the shluchim to keep learning, and of course to make time to learn all that, but it's not like learning the shiva full time, right? So, but it's not about you. It's not about you. It's a perspective. It's a mindset that comes from this. Everything is like that. Oh, we have that level. No, we're not at any of these levels, but we know we have it. But it's what that perspective does to you. What I understand?
It's cleared a lot for me, because many years ago I asked Rabbi Goldman, why isn't it enough that I'm just the best person that I can be? I'll do the mitzvahs and I'll do whatever, and I'll be a good daughter and a good mother and help people and be kind, and why isn't that enough? And the way he explained it never really made that much sense to me, but this really does make more sense.
Because it's not about us.
It's not about me, yeah.
It's about what Hashem wants me. Now, of course Hashem wants us to be, sometimes Hashem wants us to be, that we should, you know, climb one step at a time. And obviously there's all, it's all about what does Hashem want? How does Hashem want me to do this, right? You know, it comes out in so many different areas. It comes out like in learning, the same thing, right? This week's parasha, actually, I just recorded my podcast this morning, so I was talking about this. So, this week's parasha, the very beginning of the parasha, talks about learning Torah. Im b'chukoy sat aleich, says, if you walk in my chukim, right? If you walk in my chukim, and Rashi says, not referring to mitzvahs, not referring to the chukim of mitzvahs, it's talking about Torah, learning Torah, toiling in Torah, right? Rulam Afarshim asked the question, so why does he use that expression? Because the rest of the pasuk talks about mitzvahs. So this part of the pasuk is talking about learning Torah, but it's a strange thing. So if you want to say, if Hashem says, if you learn Torah, I'll reward you, what does it say? If you learn Torah, why does it say, if you'll walk in my chukim? Right? Chukim are irrational things, chukim when you keep, right? Because the same idea, we have to learn Torah, but the approach to Torah is chukim. I'm doing it not because I want to understand, I'm doing it because Hashem wants me to understand. And therefore, if things I don't understand, that's fine too. And if things Hashem wants me to do that don't make any sense, that's also good. Right? Judaism is not a rational religion. Part of that religion is Hashem wants every part of us to serve Him, so therefore He wants our brain to understand also. Right? I think I told you the story with my grandfather. I'm sure I've told you the story, but I'll tell you anyways. With my grandfather, my father's father, when he came once to the Rebbe, right at the beginning of the Rebbe's leadership, my grandfather was a very big intellectual, the Hasidus, was known as one of the leading intellectuals of Hasidus at his time. He lived in Tel Aviv. And he came to the Rebbe in Tovshin Yud Beis, 1942 was the first time he saw the Rebbe after the Rebbe became Rebbe. And it was Purim for Brengen. And he walked over to the Rebbe. Those days were smaller, you could still talk to the Rebbe about for Brengen. And he was very emotional. He said to the Rebbe, he wants a bracha from the Rebbe. He wants a bracha for Amunah. He wants to be able to believe. This is intellectual talking. Because he said to the Rebbe, Fashtein, Fashtein, Ben Garnished. Because when it comes to understanding, we don't understand anything anyway. So I'm just asking a bracha, we should believe. So the Rebbe told him like this. The Rebbe said to him a very deep idea, very simple but very profound. The Rebbe said, Fashtein Dafman, you do need to understand. But you mustn't want to understand. In other words, my serving of Hashem should not be based on what I understand. I mustn't want to understand. That's Nasiv Nishma, basically, coming out of Shavuos. Hashem says, do, jump, you jump. Do a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah. You shouldn't even want to understand. You mustn't ask why. But you must understand as much as you can, because Hashem wants you to understand. That's why. Because Hashem wants that part of, because Hashem wants the whole of us. He wants us to bring godliness into the human brain, into the human environment, into the physical world. Part of that is understanding. Part of when we learn a Gemara, we learn a Chumash, we learn Hashem's wisdom, we bring it into our brain, is because we're bringing Hashem's wisdom into our physical brain. That's part of bringing Hashem into the world. Then it goes further into the wider world, but it actually starts with our world. Right? But not because
it's not the starting
Ah, it's not the starting point. It's not a condition. And therefore, the Rebbe brings it out in a few ways in a sikha on this week's parasha. It manifests away in the way we learn. First of all, we will work harder to understand things that we think we can't understand. Because it's not about just learning things that resonate with us. It's about learning things. In other words, you'll take the parts of Torah that they're hard for you to understand, and you're going to try and understand them, right? And you'll explore things, and also you'll surrender to the axioms. In other words, you'll surrender to the parts of Torah which don't make that sense. In other words, it's not because when you learn Torah, for example, it's not like learning another subject. There's certain foundations you have to accept, and then within that you have to understand. But that's the way it goes, because it's right. It's also about the way we defer to those rabbis of the Gemara and the great tzaddikim and so on, even though we don't understand sometimes what they say, and so on, right? So that's a whole other it's a whole other approach. Where does it come from? It comes from this idea. That's not a badass, right? And this is the flame. The flame means we're not holding by the actual madrega. We still want to, right? We're still pretty much interested in being alive and enjoying life. And being a big yichus, but right, because we've got a big nefesh abam, so we've got a big animal soul that hides the goldy soul. But at least if we can develop a perspective like that, it's not about me, it's not about what I, you know. I'll tell you also where it manifests itself, right? Like, understanding is one thing. So this is this point that the Rebbe says, like, you understand because you need to understand, not because you have to want to understand, right? So same thing in everything in Yiddishkeit. So, like, for example, it's good to, when you do mitzvahs, to be inspired by the mitzvahs, right? Obviously, when you sit down to a seder, you want it to be inspirational seder, right? Shabbos, a yontif, a davening, you want it to be inspirational. That's what it should be, because we're supposed to be uplifted. But how about if it's not? So what do I do? Why? Because it's not about us. It's not about us. Now, that doesn't mean we should look for inspiration. Of course we have to learn. Hashem wants us, just like He gave us chukim and mishpatim, because mishpatim have a very important purpose. First of all, it sustains the chukim. Second of all, it's Hashem wants it to be in all parts of who we are. So, of course, that's what we're going to look for, right? It's a little bit like the story, the famous story. In other words, our default position is, of course, we need to understand, because that's what Hashem wants. Of course, we need to try and have an inspirational davening, because that's what Hashem wants us to do. But it's not because we need that, because I feel good, because that's inspiring to me, that's why I'm doing it. I'm feeling inspired because Hashem wants me not only to do it, He wants me to also be inspired. But if He puts me in a situation where inspiration is not possible, I'm not going to do it anyways. It's a little bit like that story that I told during COVID a lot, right? About. So it's a hard thing sometimes, like, so about that famous story about Rav Zusha and his brother, Rav Zusha and Elimelech. I'm sure you remember the story. When I remind you, you'll see, you'll remember the story. But when they used to go around collecting money to release people from jail, right, under the very harsh Russian regime or whatever. Anyway, once they got caught doing something, I don't know, the police picked on two Jews and they threw them into a dungeon, a prison cell. You know the story? And there was and Rav Zusha all of a sudden was very, very upset. Oh, no, Rav Elimelech, I think, was very, very upset. Rav Zusha says to him, why, you know, simcha by the tzaddikim, especially the Hasidim rabbis, simcha was a big thing, right, under every circumstance. He says, brother, why are you sad? He says, don't you see? So what happened was, in the middle of the cell, there was a bucket that they used for their physical needs. That was the toilet system in those days, I guess, in a prison cell. And he says, we're not allowed to daven now, because that's halacha. If you got a bucket like that, you can't daven, right? So Rav Zusha said to him, you're wrong. Because, right, of course, it's good that you want to daven, but if Hashem puts you this in the situation, that means now you have to serve Hashem by not davening. He says, you're right. So they started to dance. And I'll just finish the story because I don't think I dealt with the story. So they started to dance. And they started to dance. All the Cossacks saw parties. So they also started to dance. Suddenly the door burst open. And the Cossack prison guards come in and say, what's going on here? So one of the Russian guys says, I actually don't know what's going on there. But there's something, these guys, two guys are dancing. Something to do with that bucket. I don't know exactly, but they're dancing. So the guy says, yeah, bucket. I'll take it out. So he removed it, they look at each other, now we can daven, so they start to dance again. Right? That's the word. So obviously there's certain things we look for, of course, that's what we should do, we should pursue spirituality. But it's not about us, it's not about our spirituality. You know, I'll tell you why, I'm sorry, I'm fabricating it a little bit now, but because once I start talking about these things, I get on a roll. So it's like, because nowadays you find a lot of times people want to alter Yiddishkeit. I want to change halacha. Why? Because it feels better that way. Right? It feels better. You find this in women's issues, you find it in lots of different things, right? Sometimes people will do things not according to the way Hashem wants us to do it, because they're in the name of being more spiritual, more godly. It's missing the whole point. In other words, the point is not about what you feel, the point is what Hashem wants. It's not about you, right? So people make up things. They make up new ceremonies and new brachas and new tefillas and all these things, right? It's, maybe you feel good, but that's you feeling good. That's nothing to do with Hashem. You know what I'm saying? So it's a hard balance because we do have to look for the things that sometimes inspire us, lift us up. But it's not about that. So in other words, the young man who says to Rebbe, I don't want to go on shlichus because I want to learn, that's a good thing. Because that's what you're supposed to look for. But you're supposed to just go anyways. Because it's not about you. Same sort of idea, right? So. How do we get onto this? I'm not sure. But anyways.
Sure.
Yeah, about the chokhmah of the nefesh, that's right. Chokhmah of the nefesh. So that's what the chokhmah, it all comes from that, in other words, in a real conscious way, it comes from that chokhmah of the nefesh. The chokhmah of the nefesh is this flame that's in every neshama, which is the avo mesateres, that's the hidden love, which gives birth to mesiris nefesh. That's why a yid who didn't live a love of Yiddishkeit, but when that chokhmah, when that flame comes out, flame just wants one thing, it wants to be connected to Hashem. So the guy gets arrested, the non-frum yid gets arrested, he doesn't keep Torah mitzvahs, and he says, and they say to him, Lass, you want to you have to convert, otherwise they're going to kill you. He says, kill me. Why? Because at that moment, that chokhmah nefesh comes out. What he's going to get to later on, this is the point I wanted to make, right? What he's going to get to make later is, at the end of the day, again, at the end of the day, our tachlis is not to die. Our tachlis is to remain alive. But our tachlis is to remain alive with that mesiris nefesh. And through a long process, when he gets to the end of 20, Pesach 25, he's going to explain to us that we have to have the perspective with every mitzvah that we do and everything that Hashem wants us to do. That it doesn't matter what we want. It's connecting us to Hashem, that's what we want to do. If it doesn't connect to Hashem, we want to stay away from it. And that's how you bring out the Ava Masateris, the hidden love, to everything that we do. But that's, we'll go through the process and see how it all plays out.
Wow, thank you.
Okay.
Two such good stories. We have to do that, eh? Absolutely.
The more you learn, the more you... Huh?